Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Right, let's try the levels, shall we? You were fine with these Tim Vine jokes last week, weren't you?
Not going to lie to you, can't remember.
All right, here we go then. I went down to the local ice cream shop and I said, I want to buy an ice cream. And he said, hundreds and thousands? I said, well, let's start with one.
Oh, funny.
Good.
Classic, but I've heard that one before.
Yeah, I know. I went to a pet shop. I said, can I buy a goldfish? And the guy said, do you want an aquarium? And I said, I don't care what star sign it is. All right. Well, they test the levels, don't they?
Yeah. They do their job. Those were par, though, I'd say.
Yeah, you're probably
right. I think those were maybe the worst ones we've had altogether, because they weren't even ridiculous rubbish jokes. They were just kind of like...
Well, I shall pass it on to Tim Vine.
His ones from last week were good, though.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about Tim Vine. Like, some of his jokes not that great, but he does it so fast that if there's one you don't like, don't worry, because there's another one coming along, and you will like that one.
Does he say that?
He says that. He does. We went to see him in Edinburgh.
I didn't.
No, you didn't. Myself and my friend Tony. And Tony...
Gal pal.
Tony very unwisely heckled. And he's not someone you should heckle.
What did he do?
Well, Tim Vine was going around saying, you know, what do you do for a living to people sitting on the front row? And we're sitting right on the front row. People are saying things, oh, I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. And he's got a teacher gag, of course. So he comes up with his teacher gag. Or somebody says, I'm a student. He comes up with his student gag. And Tony said, I'm a man of independent means.
That's not heckling, technically.
No, it's a comedy cul-de-sac, though. You know, he was flying down the main roads, was Tim Vine, and then Tony came in with that comedy cul-de-sac. I'm a man of independent means.
I love when you say, oh, it's a comedy cul-de-sac or whatever. That was a poor use of comedy cul-de-sac.
No, it wasn't. That's an absolute exactly
no,
what
I don't think
that was
a good use.
There's nowhere to go down there.
No. So it's not Tony's comedy cul-de-sac, it's Tim Vine's comedy cul-de-sac.
It is a general comedy cul-de-sac for anybody. This happened maybe 6 years ago, and I still haven't thought of a way you could get out of that. And every day I wake up thinking about, how can you get out of that?
Wow, imagine all the things you could have accomplished if you spent less brain power on that.
Well, while we're on the subject of comedy, Ruth...
Wow, smooth!
Thank you.
We've got transitions planned for today. We never usually do that.
No, I used to work for Radio 2, so I know how to do those links. While we're on the subject of comedy, I'm going to see Louis C.K. next week. I assume what he's trying to do is make a comeback. And he's doing only two gigs in the whole of the UK. And they're both in Leeds. One at the Hi-Fi Club in Leeds and one at the Wardrobe in Leeds. And I'd be fascinated.
I can't believe the Wardrobe have said that they'll put him on.
Well, they'll put him on because I suspect he's going to sell out. And I'm fascinated to see how he's going to come back. You know, whether he...
Do you think he'll address it in his...
Oh, he's got to. He's got to address it. It's got to be the main... I mean, he might do it rather...
I just don't think he can make a joke out of it, though. Like, I just don't understand how he could...
I don't think he can
address it sensitively.
I think he could address it by talking about...
I think you can do it funny. So there's been comedians who have committed fraud and stuff like that. I think you can quite easily make that funny.
Ken Dodd used to, yeah.
Maybe,
Ken Dodd
yeah.
got done by the tax man for.
Yeah,
not
so
decaying.
Like tax or whatever, you can make that funny if you. Or driving under the influence. Like, those are the kind of things you can make funny as long as you've not killed someone or something. I don't know how you make sexual assault funny. I don't think you can.
No, I don't think you can either. I don't think you make sexual assault funny, but I think what he can make funny is the effect that it's had on his life. I mean, he does. Louis C.K. before.
To be honest, I'd never heard of him.
Hadn't you? I had. He's a very good comedian. But Louis C.K., when he does.
He can be a good comedian, but a bad person, I suppose. Yeah,
of course you can. In fact, percentage wise, I don't think most comedians.
It's the pie like, chart of good people and comedians is just two separate circles.
Or a Venn diagram or whatever. I think you find a lot of crossover between comedians and, you know, not all together.
Yeah. No, that's the circle. It's just fully crossed over.
Yes, it's not a pie chart. It's a Venn diagram.
So, yeah, it's a Venn diagram.
A lot of comedians have those sort of personal issues, I think. Mm. But what I'm saying is he could probably address it by addressing the sort of the
storm. I
just
don't agree.
Came afterwards.
I don't know why people are giving him a platform.
Well, it's not a platform as such. He's a comedian. I mean, we've discussed this before. How long do you think it should be before he's allowed?
I don't think he should have a
pursue his job.
Well, why
again?
Can't he do a Why can't he do a normal job, like a quiet job, like loads of other people do, or do a comedy job where he's writing jokes for other people? I just don't think he should be the one who's given the platform, because what message does that send to women?
Well,
that they're less important than a man's comedy career.
No, his job is a stand-up comedian. I've also, we've talked, you know, we go back to Picasso and various other people.
Yeah.
We've talked about separating the art.
Yeah, no, I think you can separate the art from the artist, but once it's come out about what he's done, yes, he shouldn't be re-given the platform.
But you're not voting for him.
No, I'm not saying that you can.
You know, he's not running for Archbishop of Canterbury, he's just a stand-up comic.
But it acts as a symbol for everything else, doesn't it, really? For what we're saying that is okay and is not okay.
No, I just think
there's enough stand-up comedians who have not assaulted women.
Yes, there are lots of stand-up comedians, but it's beside the point. It's his job, and they're saying the same about Kevin Spacey, and I think at some point he's entitled to return to his job. If he apologises...
I thought he died again!
Who, Kevin Spacey?
I know you said he was alive. Is he not died?
No, he's not dead. He's just because someone's not on the telly, it doesn't mean they're dead.
I think we need to talk about Louis C.K. more.
My view is very simple on Louis C.K. What he did was awful, dreadful. He's apologised as he ought to apologise.
Yeah,
he's had a period in Perda, which he ought to have had. But his job is a stand-up comedian.
It's barely been a year.
I think it's a bit more. But anyway, he's a very good stand-up comedian. And he's entitled to return to his job at some point. And I hope he addresses it. And I'd be interested to know. I mean, I'm going primarily because I want to see how he does address this return. And I'm interested that he's chosen Leeds as the, you know, for his return.
I guess he probably thought he'd get too much backlash in London.
I think he did. I think he probably did. But I think he'd be surprised. He probably
We're very moral people up here.
No, I don't think it's that so much. But I think he'll be surprised. I think what he's decided to do is choose a sort of quiet provincial town that probably doesn't know about...
Which is offensive in itself.
Well, maybe it is. But go on, what else do you want to say?
I think there's two different things. I think if you rape someone, that's it. You should be going to prison or whatever. I think there's degrees of sexual assault and stuff. I don't think it should completely ruin your life, but I don't think you should be allowed to be a stand-up comedian again. That's what I'm saying. I don't think that he can... I don't think he should be banned from doing any job or anything, but I don't think he should be allowed to be on a stage. Even if he's decided, right, I'm going to be a comedian again or whatever, doesn't the wardrobe or Hi-Fi have a commitment to staging him?
I'm not sure what commitment they have. But, yeah, people are perfectly entitled to say, we don't want him in our venue,
yeah,
and therefore he won't get it. But
so maybe it should be more their responsibility.
If the venue agrees to put him on and he wants to go on and people are prepared to see him, if you go and see him, it doesn't mean you approve of sexual assault. If you go and see him, it just means he's a good
In a way.
No, it doesn't, because
well,
in that
supporting someone,
no,
aren't you?
Right, well, stay out of the National Gallery and make sure if you go into the National Gallery, you don't look at a Picasso.
I think that's different, though, because Picasso's not alive anymore.
No, he's not alive anymore. Don't look at any Picassos. Don't listen to any Wagner music. Don't do any of that.
Yeah, no, but I just think it's different because, like, they're dead, right? But they're not being actively given the platform while they're living.
Well, they were.
And
Picasso was alive when he did his paintings. And
no,
Wagner
yeah,
was
but
alive
that was a
music.
Different time. It was a different time. You can't, like, it was before we decided that it's wrong to sexually assault people.
Well, I think it's always been wrong. It's
always been wrong, but not in the same way.
But they didn't have Twitter in those days.
No, but it's not just about Twitter. We've also, I think it's a good thing that we've decided that to take more of a stand against
I think so too, and that's why I think it's right they apologise and right they had a period in purdah. But it can't go on forever. It can't go on forever. What's, you know?
I know. I don't think that the witch hunt or whatever should, that against him should go on forever, and I don't think it should be constantly in the news. And every time you mention Louis C.K., it should be reminded that whatever, he committed sexual assault, or you should never be allowed to watch his old comedy again. But I don't think he should be given a current platform.
He's not given a platform. A platform is when...
Well, the wardrobe are.
No.
He said, I want to say something.
No, they've
given him the stage.
He wants to say jokes. A platform. You're given a platform when you have a particular agenda, and then people give you a platform to push it. He's not going there to promote sexual assault. It's not a sort of political movement. He's not saying we should
but
all be...
But he's a political movement against women.
Well, here's something that might interest you. You know, you were saying last week that when you get to 80, it should be time to check out. That
I think that's unfair because I was saying...
You said it at home and then you said it on the podcast.
No, I said I don't think we should be just putting down 80-year-olds. I'm just saying that I think we'll get to a point where there's not really another option.
Right.
But I'm not going to enjoy it.
Well, you'd love that. Right, so you're going to do it, but reluctantly.
Yeah.
That was your sort of Soylent Green scenario. So you'd be interested in this that's popped up. It's a pop-up shop that's popped up in Lewisham.
It's
a pop-up shop that's popped up. But that's what pop-up shops do, isn't it? And this is a pop-up shop that's popped up to talk about popping off. And it's basically your last... It's a death shop. It's called the Departure Lounge. It's in Lewisham.
Funny.
And you can go in there to discuss your final journey. Passers-by are being invited to discuss checking out. It looks like a travel agent when you go in there. It's a research project run by the Academy of Medical Sciences and the Wellcome Trust. And basically, it hopes to break taboos about death and encourage people to think and talk positively about how they wish their life to end. There's a quote here from a retired district nurse who volunteers as a guide there. And people have asked her about things like making wills, lasting power of attorney. And one woman apparently just wanted to share her recent experience of grief. And what they say the shop will do, you can discuss death in there over a lemonade with a range of, it says this, over a lemonade.
Didn't add in the lemonade.
No, I didn't add in the lemonade. You'd think you'd want something stronger. But anyway, with a range of experts, and they have an end-of-life doula. You know what a doula is, don't you?
No.
Ah, well, a doula is someone who's non-medical but helps pregnant women. So it's a sort of lay person who will help you through pregnancy and childbirth.
Huh.
But now it's been expanded to provide support for the dying. So a doula sort of helps you...
They can't provide help after death, though.
No, well, that's true. It helps you on your final journey. She says it's about helping to make people feel less anxious and fearful and to understand that with support they can have a good death. How many people do you think die in Britain a year? Have a guess.
30 million.
No, 500,000 people died in Britain last year.
Not that many. How many people live in Britain?
It's about 60 million, maybe.
Yeah, and one dies every second. No one in the world dies every second.
Yeah, not...
We'd have no people left.
60 to 70 million, I think, is the population of Britain. 500,000 died last year, and by 2040, we'll see an increase of 25%.
Oh, is that because everyone's getting old?
Well, and there's more people about, and
right.
And I think you're right. The sort of
aging population.
Yeah, it's an aging population as well.
The baby boomers.
Professor Sir Robert Lechler, the Academy's president, said, "As people live longer, the last lap of life tends to be associated with living with diseases. The risk is people are not dying well." So I think this is a
marvelous initiative.
No, you said kill them all.
No,
but this...
I said my main point was that euthanasia should be legal. That was just a backup point.
Your backup point.
No, it wasn't a backup point. It was like a...
But you'd set the ceiling at 80, more or less. But he said the risk of people not dying well. And I think that is a good move. Unlike literally just killing people.
I wasn't going to do it right now. I just said that I think that someone will have to.
Mm. Well, I mean, something will have to happen. I think you're right. But exactly what, we don't know. So what would you say if I suddenly said to you, "That's so fetch, What would you think?
I'd say that's from Clueless. No, Mean Girls.
Mean Girls. Mean Girls. You just said Mean Girls.
No, I said Mean Girls. I went Clueless, and then I went, oh, no, Mean Girls.
Mean Girls it is. It's 25 years since Mean Girls was released. And interestingly, from June the 12th to the 16th, there's a Mean Girls reunion, and it's taking place at the Seymour Leisure Centre in Marylebone in central London, which is just round the corner from my brother's flat where I stay when I'm in London. Throughout the day that they're doing this, or throughout the weekend that they're doing this, they'll be sprinkling quotes such as, "That's so fetch," into the conversation. It's an immersive event. The Seymour Leisure Centre in Marylebone will be turned into sets. So there'll be sets from the film so that fans can experience a spring fling. Do you know all about a spring fling?
Mm-hmm. That's the prompt.
And you'll be able to eat cheese fries.
Is that a thing from Mean Girls? That's what they eat.
Yep.
Although I wouldn't have said that that was like a really...
Not such a Mean Girls thing.
Well, no, it's a Mean Girls thing, but I just wouldn't have thought that that would have been one of the things they zeroed in on.
Is it a really good film, Mean Girls?
It's brilliant. You know, it's based on Julius Caesar.
Ah, right, Et tu, Brute. And
there's all these bits where there's like, it's like kind of like wild animals and stuff. It's really, really, not wild animals, but they kind of go like, she explains it and there's like lion sounds. Sort of but thing. Yeah, can't say that.
Can't say go native. Why can't you say go native?
Well, because I think.
No, I don't think you can say go native.
Well, isn't it offensive to like Native American people?
No, I don't think it means...
Or the natives of a place.
I thought it meant...
It implies like Europeans are civilised and everyone else isn't.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know whether you can't say that.
No.
I'll have to wait and hear from the... From the people who say you're not allowed to say stuff. I don't know who they are.
Let's put it out on Twitter. I'll say somebody's gone native on Twitter, and we'll soon find out whether you're allowed to say it or not. Twitter, as you know, these days, is the ultimate arbiter of pretty well everything.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's not actually Twitter, though. It is people.
It is people who are tweeting, but it's like...
But the platform is not who's telling you what to say and what not to say. Do you know what I mean?
No, it's not Twitter itself, but Twitter is the conduit which allows people to tell you, if you're Danny Baker.
Well, wait to hear back. Danny. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed, going native.
Yeah, it's based on Julius Caesar.
Yeah, based on Julius Caesar. But when you say they become like wild animals, it's a bit like Lord of the Flies, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's got a Lord of the Flies esque thing. It's Lord of the Flies for girls. It's got such a...
Would you go to a reunion like that, though?
Yeah.
What's your 12th to 16th, mark it now?
Yeah.
Your exams?
12th to 16th of what?
Oh, right in June. Your exams, right in the middle of your exams.
Great, thanks, Dad.
You're very welcome.
It's nice to, you keep being like, oh, you can go to this roof, and then you're like, oh, when is it? Oh, I'm doing a French exam on that day. Thanks.
Well, as you've raised exams, Ruth, let's talk about exam stress, which is such a big topic at the moment.
I'm so stressed.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it. Well, you know, why you're stressed. Well, I know modern language is a problem, isn't it? The French.
Yeah, although that's not the one I'm the most stressed about. I'm surprised that that's come out.
Well, a survey...
Go on, Dad, enlighten us.
I'll enlighten you. An extraordinary revelation was that it's common to get GPs' notes saying that children must be excused modern languages because they get too anxious. One head teacher at the secondary school's conference reported, quotes, "Children wholesale signed off by their GPs from the study of MFL, modern foreign languages, because it was making them so unwell they couldn't attend school."
Is that because they're nervous about like the speaking exam or something? I know that French and all modern foreign languages at GCSE have changed since I did them. I was the last year to go
through
with the new spec.
It's all changed, hasn't it, at GCSE?
Yeah, a lot of them are really similar, but French is one of the few that has properly changed because you used to do a lot of it as so basically it was just a memorising test, really. You'd write 6 paragraphs, you'd memorise them and then just rewrite them, like regurgitate them.
Yes, I remember you doing that.
But now I think that you don't know what the question is going to be until you go in.
Well,
but then I've heard from people who are doing their GCSEs now that their teachers tell them what question it's going to be anyway.
Well, it's interesting you say this, because there's this new thing, the baccalaureate, that's coming, which is after...
I did the baccalaureate.
Did you?
Well, you have to do geography or history, and then a modern foreign language, and then you get the EBAC.
Yes, that's right. And it's saying here that this teacher was worried that maybe these kids are not doing the MFL because of school anxiety, that they hit the EBAC target. She says, I suppose this supports the theory that some of the neurosis that the kids have got stems from the competitive anxiety of schools themselves. One guy from, a guy called Roger Taylor, who's the chairman of Ofqual, which I think is a sort of education watchdog type thing, says rising exam stress, he's attributing it to pupils being, quote, mentally fragile, rather than GCSEs and A-levels becoming harder by the head of the exams regulation.
Yeah, that's really likely.
Yeah. Roger Taylor says a rise in anxiety means that teenagers are finding it harder to deal with stressful events.
Yeah, but the exams are getting harder as well, so that's going to be part of it.
Possibly.
But I do think it's other external factors, but I think a lot of it is exam stress.
Well, don't worry about it because...
Oh, okay. Yep, cool, I work.
Because there are top tips here from Queen Anne's School, who spent 5 years working with neuroscientists at universities, including Oxford, Reading and Goldsmith. And they've come up with the ultimate revision guide based on its Brain Can Do programme in time for this year's A-levels. It advises pupils not to burn the midnight oil because it's better to revise at the same time of day at which the exams are sat. Also, they're suggesting conditioning. Select a trigger, such as squeezing your ear or sniffing a lemon. Spend 5 minutes a day.
Yeah, I've heard this before.
Have you?
Like chewing the same type of gum while you're revising as when you're in the exam that, like, triggers your mind to remember stuff.
Are you allowed to chew gum in your exam? Are you chewing gum? Give it here.
You're allowed to bring in, like, Mentors or Polos or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as long as you can put them in your pencil case, as long as they're not in a wrapper.
Oh.
If you just put them in a plastic bag or something.
Why can't you put them in a wrapper?
In case you've written on the wrapper. Everything has to be clear. Clear bottles.
Yeah. So it's almost like you're going abroad. It must be quite exciting when you go in with your clear packet. Spend 5 minutes a day thinking or doing something that makes you smile and feel confident in the process.
5 minutes a day? That all you get to smile?
Think or do something that makes you smile and feel confident in the presence of your trigger. On exam day, use your trigger to invoke the same positivity. So squeeze your ear, sniff a lemon.
I can't bring a lemon into an exam. Imagine the looks you'd get.
Well, I think you sniff the lemon before you go in.
Yeah, but where do I put the lemon afterwards?
Just put it in the bin.
You have to queue to get into the exam?
Yeah.
How long does the lemon power last?
We'll take a short break and then we'll have some music.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Start with mine this week. I've got a little bit of rock and roll history for you. The music is Eddie Cochran. On the 20th floor of town, the elevator's broken down, so I walk one, flight three, flight four, flight six, seven, flight eight, flight more. Up on the 12th, I'm starting to drag. 15th floor, I'm ready to sag. Get to the top, I'm too tired to rock. Well, she calling me up on the telephone. She come on over, honey, I'm all alone. I said, baby, you're mighty sweet, but I'm in bedroom with the aching feet. 20 Flight Rock by Eddie Cochran. That's a bit of musical history for you there, Ruth. Eddie Cochran was a late 50s rock and roll star. We're not playing any late 50s rock and roll, I don't think.
No.
Would have sounded a bit like Elvis to you, that?
Yeah.
It was very much the Elvis Presley era.
You could have told me that was Elvis and I'd have gone, all right, okay.
No. Well, it's Eddie Cochran, who was a massive star, a huge star.
But not lasted in the way that
He died in a car crash, actually. He died during the afternoon of Easter Sunday, 17th of April, 1960. And this is very interesting. He died in St. Martin's Hospital in Bath. He was in a private vehicle. He was doing a tour there, one of those rock and roll tours with Gene Vincent, who was another rock and roller of that era. Yeah. And it was a taxi driver, and he was thrown out of the car. There was no seat belts in those days and everything. Landed on his head.
It's really sad.
It is very sad. Died in Chippenham, 1960. But a lot of people thought he was, he was almost as popular as Elvis, if you like, at that period. But 20 Flight Rock was very influential, and we haven't mentioned the Beatles for a week or two. But
have we not?
I don't think so. But let me tell you, can I tell you about the 6th of July, 1957?
Go ahead.
6th of July, 1957 was a pivotal day in the history of modern music. It was the day that John Lennon met Paul McCartney for the first time. The Quarrymen Skiffle Group, which was...
One of my favourites.
Well, you know what skiffle is, don't you? Because I think we've played skiffle.
Is it like that...
It's got like a
washboard.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one, exactly. So the Quarrymen Skiffle Group were playing at the Garden Fete of St. Peter's Church, Walton in Liverpool. John Lennon was the leader of the Quarrymen Skiffle Group. Paul McCartney was taken along to that fete by a mutual friend, a school friend of both John and Paul. And Paul was watching them doing their little gig at the Summer Fete, and he was very impressed with John, was playing a song called Come Go With Me by Del Vikings. Good song. So he was playing that. Paul was impressed, afterwards went up to meet John and said, I'd like to join your group, the Quarrymen. And John said, well, what do you do? Paul got the guitar and played that song, 20 Flight Rock, by Eddie Cochran.
Wow.
John was impressed that Paul remembered all the words. He did all the words for that. Because the song itself, I don't know whether you could work out from that 20-odd seconds
not
we played,
really.
But the song itself was about a girl who lives 20 flights up and the lift has broken in her block of flats. And he's always too tired. When he gets up to the top floor, he's too tired to rock and roll. Rock and roll being a euphemism for...
I understand.
Yes. So he's too tired to rock and roll. And he was in bed with aching feet at the end of the song. And Eddie Cochran used to do those sort of little slices of social realism, if you like.
Yeah.
His other big song was Summertime Blues. And he's got the Summertime Blues because his parents are always asking him to do little jobs and everything.
Yeah.
But the other interesting fact about it is, if you want to tie it all in with the Beatles, and you know me, I do like to tie everything in with...
I don't particularly, but
I do, don't I?
All right, okay.
The taxi driver was called George Martin.
Wow.
And George Martin, of course, is the producer of all those Beatles songs. So there you go.
The fifth Beatle, as some might call him.
The fifth Beatle. And there are lots of fifth Beatles, but he was one of them. So there you are, 20 Flight Rock by Eddie Cochran. Tell me about yours.
So mine is a song called Lovers by Anna of the North.
Guess there's just some promises you shouldn't make. Should have known from the start. Now I'm in the dark. Show the
Well, it's no 20 Flight Rock, but it's very pleasant.
Do you like it?
Yeah, I do.
I think it's better than your 20 Flight Rock, personally. So she's another Norwegian singer.
Norwegians. They're everywhere, aren't they? So that's why she's called Anna of the North.
She studied graphic design, and then she moved to Melbourne, where she met Brady Daniel Smith, who was her producer and stuff. So she sang and he produced the songs and gave it that... electro pop feel. I know her because she has done a lot of featuring on other people's things. So she featured on Tyler the Creator's singles, Boredom and 911, Mr. Lonely, in his Flower Boy album, which Frank Ocean is also on. I really like Frank Ocean. And then she did something with that Reggie Snow, who we've had as well.
See, I thought you'd chosen Anna of the North because your sister is Anna, and here we are in the North, but clearly it's no
different
connection.
North, much further north.
Much further north. We also talk a little bit about Chernobyl, the show on Sky, which is interesting to you, for you, I would have thought, apart from anything else, because you are studying the Soviet Union.
Yeah, I don't study, it's after I finished it. I study up to Khrushchev. But it is interesting
three
seeing
H's
the...
in his name.
You three?
Three H's.
Can you... I spell it wrong every single time.
Yeah.
I forget one of the H's somewhere. It's interesting seeing the Soviets kind of landscape and how... And how the sort of you see this like central committee, which is really similar to what they had in like Stalin's time.
Oh, same, yeah.
The character of Gorbachev is just interesting and stuff. So it is really good. I didn't realise quite how neglectful the government were.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
In dealing with it. Because I knew about the accident, but I didn't really know about how they dealt with it, like the aftermath of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first thought was... The first
how
thought
to cover
was
it up.
Keeping, it was how to cover it up. Straight away, how to cover it up. And bringing the military police to stop panic so that people don't panic and all that. And that meeting with Gorbachev that's in it was how it's perceived by the rest of the world. And they were more worried about the Soviet Union's reputation
than they were about the people, yeah.
About the people. It's unbelievable. But it's well worth watching. Let's talk a wee bit about tourism. You're going on a big trip with your friends from school.
Yeah, excuse me, though, Dad.
Resources.
You go on trips as well. You just went to Barcelona, so do not say, "Oh, I'd never go on trips, and I don't fly here, and I don't fly there."
No, I think what you find about me is I don't bang on about climate change as much as you do. So you and your friends...
I don't go on an unbelievable amount of flights, though.
Mm.
I go on probably two flights a year, one there, one back.
You are going to Venice, which is hugely oversubscribed by tourists.
True.
Massively.
Tourism in itself is not evil, either.
No, it's not evil, no.
But tourism keeps entire economies in countries... afloat. Like, that's the main source of income for a lot of places.
Mm.
I'm just saying that tourism, it shouldn't be about, oh, we shouldn't be tourists anymore. It should be about how to make tourism sustainable.
Yes, you're probably right. And what it also should be is we should go to places that aren't oversubscribed by tourists, you know, unlike Venice, which is...
Yeah.
And probably unlike Barcelona, to be
honest.
But
there's reasons why people go to... those places. Mm. There's a reason why people have always visited Venice so much, is because it's completely different to the place where we live, and it's steeped in history and culture. Like, there's plenty of places in the world where tourists don't go, because I'm trying to say that, like, there's a reason people go to the same places, and it's because they're interesting places to go to. I'm sure there's lots of other places that are really, really interesting that people haven't gone, but also... most places in Europe are really full of tourists because Europe's not that big, and it's also much cheaper to go there. Like, a lot of the places that are less touristy and would be really exciting to go to and that I would love to go to, it's too expensive to get there. The flights are too expensive.
Mm. But, of course, a lot of those countries are also getting over.
Yeah, they are
now. Because of cruise ships. And because cruise ships, you're not on a cruise ship. So that's
cruise ships are the worst.
They are the worst. But all sorts of places are having to take all sorts of action. Capri has banned tourists from bringing single-use plastic. There's too many tourists in Capri, and they come in with, you know, water bottles and stuff.
Yeah.
So Capri have banned tourists from being, and they want fewer tourists. Giles Corran wrote in the Times, "The fact that they're putting the environment before the money makes me want to visit." There's a couple of other climate change stories at the moment. In fact, there's a petition which has got 44,000 signatures on it, asking McDonald's to bring back plastic straws.
Oh, that will never happen.
Because apparently the paper ones go soggy in the milk.
In fairness, I can see where they're coming from. It is near to impossible to drink
a
milky or like a frappuccino out of a paper straw.
Yeah.
It's next to impossible, but there's some sacrifices that I think people are just willing to make. And if you can't drink out of a straw like that, maybe just don't drink it.
Or maybe take the top off and
you can't sip that kind of drink, Beth.
Why?
It's too thick. It's far too thick.
I've done that. I've sipped a thick
McDonald's. You've had a McDonald's milkshake.
At some
You're
point,
blatantly lying.
No, at some point I will have had a milkshake. When you were little, when the other kids were little, and we used to occasionally go to McDonald's.
Yeah, yeah.
I've had a milkshake.
A milkshake. Yeah, but have you had a frappe milkshake that they've got now? Because I don't think you have. Because
no.
I don't think you've been to McDonald's recently. I've had a mango, like an orange and mango frappe.
What, at McDonald's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Difficult to drink with a paper straw.
Mm.
But also, if you took the top off, you just can't. It's too thick to sip, but what I want is they do collapsible, like, rubbery plastic straws, which are just reusable. You can wash them out and use them over and over again. That's what you need. Everyone needs to be carrying around their own cutlery and straws.
Yeah, okay, I think that's a good idea. Like, in As Good As It Gets.
Yeah. Also, so hygienic.
Yeah. There you go.
Well, although no, I do believe
Jack Nicholson used to throw it away afterwards.
Metal?
No, he used to have his own plastic. I think there's got to be this balance between state intervention, which we're sort of emotionally and philosophically against, really. Mm. You know, the more state intervention, that means the more sort of bureaucracy you get.
Yeah,
the
we're
more
worried about, like, communism, you know, as well, I guess. It's got the
It has got that. But there's going to have to be a balance that's going to be struck, because...
stuff like the plastic bottles, though, is like things that people can do on their own, but because they're kind of difficult to do and some people don't have the means or the time to recycle stuff properly, they just choose not to. So I think it's about, like, the state making it easier for people to do what they already kind of want to do.
Yes, I think that's a good point. I mean, another story that I read this week was that drivers who leave their car engine running while parked, you know, people sit in the car. Mm. The private schools near us, they've always got these big Range Rovers that they, for some unknown reason, they drive around in. And they're always waiting for their kids to come out of school with the engine running.
Yeah.
Well, so obviously I'm in favour of this. Drivers leave their car engine running while parked could be given instant fines under proposals being considered by the government to give councils stronger powers to tackle pollution from idling vehicles. That's one of those sort of state control things that I quite approve of. Like to bring up the problem of Robert De Niro. Who,
oh, no.
I'm sorry, Robert De Niro, sellout, complete, total, utter sellout. He's doing an advert.
I thought you were going to say he's assaulted someone. That's what I was really worried about.
No, don't worry about that. Well, he probably has. I don't say he probably has.
Not on a Harvey Weinstein level.
I would think if you went back into the history of these actors in the 70s, gone through a couple of divorces, I would think you'd find Robert De Niro's sexual politics not entirely to your liking, I would reckon.
No, but I mean, it's different. It's a different thing of making some distasteful jerks or, like, coming onto a girl at a party than what Louis C.K. did.
Yes, well, Louis C.K. is bizarre and very difficult to understand, whereas Robert De Niro is probably just straightforward sexism, I would have thought. Straightforward.
Yeah. Also, I think you can be sexist then and not sexist anymore.
Forget about sexism. Robert De Niro is a sellout, complete sellout, and I'll tell you why. He is advertising bagels... Bagels. I mean, I object to this on a sort of on a cultural level, on an ethnic level. He's advertising bagels.
All the levels, I think.
Every level. He's advertising bagels that are made by Warburtons. Warburtons are the Lancashire bread makers. You know, Warburtons are famous for their white loaves. And they make bread in Bolton, I think. Bolton or Preston, somewhere like that. That's not even a bagel town. Manchester, if they did it in Manchester or Leeds, those are bagel towns. They have significant Jewish populations, and therefore they're proper bagel towns. I don't know what...
they're what we the business call bagel towns.
They are bagel
We've
towns.
We've got Bagel Nash. It's got a factory in Leeds.
Precisely, and that's a little Jewish firm that started in Leeds.
Did it?
Yeah, it was just one shop around here, actually, where we're broadcasting from at this very moment.
So he's advertising bagels.
He's advertising bagels. He's also, when you look at his film history over there, I mean, Robert De Niro made some of the great films. Raging Bull, absolutely brilliant
Heat.
Film. Yeah, Heat and others.
I've never seen Heat.
Yeah, Goodfellas. I mean, loads of.
I've never seen any of those films.
Oh, they're good.
Maybe over the summer, one of my things, I might just take 3 days or something and just watch some classic movies.
Yeah. Well, I think it's... although you often decide you're going to do one of these projects. I mean, not you personally. I mean, a person. I was going to spend, like, three days in London and learn everything about art.
This is the funniest thing. Walk into an art gallery
The National Gallery.
We walked into... Yeah, the National Gallery, or the National Portrait Gallery or something. And we were just walking around and we were like, oh, gosh, it's really annoying. You never remember about these artists or whatever. You can look at them and... you don't really understand it. And Dad just goes, I think I might, in the summer, I might go down to London for 3 days and just learn everything about art. So some people go to school for 4 years, and so they do 4 years of art, and then they'll do a PhD for two, and then a doctorate. They do about probably 20 years of studying and still don't know half the things about art. If you were going to go to London, learn everything in 3 days.
Speed learning. Because I do speed reading, you know. I read The Whole of War and Peace in an afternoon. It's about Russia. That's a Woody Allen joke.
War and Peace is one of those things where you should just watch the series.
Yeah. Anyway, so Robert De Niro made all these fantastic films, but in the last 20... Does he need that much money? In the last 20 years, Meet the Fockers, The Little Fockers, Meet the Parents...
The Intern. I love that film.
Yeah, but it's bad. It's not bad. It's terrible.
I don't think he's bad.
So many other films that he's... And there are loads of others that I can't even remember. Why does he make so many bad films? And then... To compound it, advertise bagels. Bagels from Bolton or Preston or somewhere.
Meet the Fockers is not a bad film, first of all.
No, Meet the Parents is not a bad film. Meet the Fockers is awful.
I liked Meet the Little Fockers as well. I thought it was good.
That was just called The Little Fockers.
Wasn't it Meet the Little Fockers?
It was just
Interesting why they did Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers, and then The Little Fockers.
Because I think The Little Fockers sounds better than
Meet the Little Fockers.
Meet the Little Fockers, yeah.
Probably sounds better than Meet the Fockers as well, though.
I think the main benefit of those films is the fact they use the word Fockers a great deal, so you can go around saying Fockers.
I think, yeah, The Little Fockers, I thought was actually quite good.
But yeah, Robert De Niro, I just wanted to call out Robert De Niro for the bagels.
So what, though? Did you see that? I wish I could remember the actual number, but people who are billionaires would have to spend, like, £1,500, like, a second or something, and there's actually just no need.
No, there's a hotel in London called the Mandarin Oriental, which overlooks Hyde Park. So you can see it's quite an attractive property there. Overlooks Hyde Park. It's got
a hotel, did you say?
Yeah, the Mandarin Oriental, it's called. It's got a suite, a penthouse suite. And when I say a suite, I mean a big, big, big suite. Overlooks Hyde Park, and you get a view over the whole of London.
Well, let's stare.
Do you know how much it costs a night?
£20,000?
£42,000. £42,000. And it's for, you know, for oligarchs who need to spend £42,000 in a night.
If I won like the proper lottery and won like 7 million or whatever, or 34 on the Euro Millions or whatever, that would be, I would give most of it away to charity, and I'd give money to my friends and my family and whatever.
And your dad?
You can share with mum. But I would give a lot of it away. But you've got to have some like frivolous spending. I think I would spend two nights in there. Because what's 84,000 if you've got 34 million?
Yeah, that's true.
Nothing.
I wish I'd brought the piece in telling you everything that you get. But you basically get... do you like television? You do. You love television. Well, if you love television, you'll love this place because it has 8 televisions.
I thought you were going to say 8 channels. I was like, oh, no. Cool.
8 televisions, including one in the bathroom, which is set into an alcove above your lovely marble bath.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's nothing more fancy than
it's the size of
being in the bath and watching
well.
It.
Do you have a meme of the week?
Yes.
Oh, by the way, no emails this week. Not one single email.
I'm glad all I get is abuse.
If you want to abuse Ruth and send us an email of any sort whatsoever, we'd love to get it. It's martinandruthpodcaster@gmail.com. martinandruthpodcaster@gmail.com. If you want to send us an email, if you have any comments on anything we've said or want to raise a subject yourself, we'd love to hear from you.
You know what? I've been really struggling to find, like, text posts, like, ones without pictures and stuff, that I've found funny of recent times. I thought this was funny, but I'm not sure you will. This is just a tweet. I saw someone's tweet. It's not even a... Got 45,000 likes, so, you know, big tweet.
It becomes a meme if 45,000 likes.
Nothing worse than sleeping at a friend's house and their family at some weird-ass thing, like, calling spaghetti Billy dinner. Yeah, and I went to a friend's house and they had pasta. It's like basically, I think it's just like pasta and tomato sauce with cheese on or something. They called it Isaac pasta.
Isaac pasta, why?
Isaac, like the name.
Yeah, did they have a reason for it?
Like a friend who really liked the pasta when they came round to their house, and so then it always just got called Isaac pasta.
Right.
But it's weird, so they're like, we're having Isaac pasta, and then you have to be like, what is Isaac pasta?
Other families
weird. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then everyone thinks their family is weird and every other family is normal, but then you go to other families and then they're weird.
Do you think people come around to our house think we're weird?
Yeah.
In what respect?
Just weird. Just because families do, like, little things you do different, like keeping the ketchup in the cupboard versus the fridge. Like, some families keep the ketchup in the fridge. Why would you ever do that?
Why would you do that?
The bottle goes all...
Yeah.
Like, misty.
Have you had a word with these people who are keeping ketchup in the fridge?
It's just weird, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's strange.
People just do weird things.
People are strange, as the Doors said all those years ago.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
We'll be back next week. Again, we'd love to hear you. We'd love to hear what you've got to say on an email, if you want to.
Yeah, what are we going to do about next week?
How do you mean what we're going to do?
I've got an exam on the Tuesday and the Thursday.
Well, we'll do it on the Wednesday.
I can't, Dad, are you actually kidding?
Well, we'll do it...
On the Thursday night, the Thursday evening.
We'll try and fit one in next week. If we can't do one next week, apologies. And hopefully my cold will have gone by then as well. So we'll try and do one next week, yeah?
Yeah.
OK, thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.